I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
Bueller.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Put the bunny back in the box.
Bueller.
Hello and welcome to another fun-filled episode of the Movie Chasm, where we discuss film news, views, and reviews. My name is Dave Baldwin, and as always, I am here with my wonderful, awesome, and thoughtful co-hosts, Matt Layden and Greg Durkach.
Hello.
Yo.
How are we tonight, fellas?
I'm well. Yourself?
I am well.
I'm pretty good.
Well, we don't care about you, Greg.
Oh, fine. It's great.
You're just here for the show. It's okay.
I'm here for the eye candy.
The eye candy, yeah? I like that.
I'm kidding. We all care about you, Greg.
No, it's been said. You can't take it back.
Don't lie to him. So today is August 16th. It's a Thursday.
2012.
It's 10:29 p.m.
Unfortunately, we don't have any background stuff today, so we won't be able to comment on the Olympics like last time, unfortunately. There's not really much news this week. Greg, you informed us that there was something that caught your eye.
The Avengers is gonna... They set the date. It's scheduled to release May 1st, 2015. Thoughts?
Well, I just want to say, on our last podcast, Dave kept saying how they're going to bring in new blood, new talent, and Joss Whedon won't be doing it. And I just got to say that I said he would be. And what happened, Dave? Can you fill my mind on what happened there?
Joss Whedon's doing Avengers 2.
Thank you very much. I rest my case.
I thought they would bring in new blood. My mistake.
It is your mistake.
My mistake. My mistake.
The release date, I'm fine with that. Yeah. May was a good month for them for the first one. Why not try and get around the same time?
Yeah. 3 years sounds like a good distance between the sequels.
Yeah, well, they still gotta build up the second one with all the sequels to Thor, Captain America, Iron Man. Yeah.
And Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Which apparently, like, I was reading some history about them, and they have conflict with Thanos a lot.
Really?
So I don't know how they're gonna integrate that sort of backstory into the film or into the whole Marvel universe, but you know what? Should be interesting.
I'm so looking forward to that squirrel.
Yeah. Flying squirrel or something. I don't know.
It's like a rocket squirrel. And he has a gun. I've seen him with a gun.
There's some tree guy, I think. He's made out of wood. Really weird. Really out there.
Like, sounds nuts.
I'd like to say that I'm not huge on comics. I'd like to say I have a fairly good knowledge of comics. I've never heard of these guys.
Neither have I.
Neither have you. And I know you know comics.
Well,
as
I don't know them that well, but
you have enough of a... You could probably still have enough of a knowledge. You'd have more than... You'd be able to explain it all to Greg, who probably doesn't have that much knowledge.
Well, like you said,
I've never read a comic that didn't have Archie or Garfield in it.
Really?
Well, I don't read, like, graphic novels.
So you never read Watchmen or...
Don't you parentheses graphic novels. They're a thing.
I'm aware. Okay.
Well, you should. They're good. Like, yeah. I think The Long Halloween and Watchmen...
I do want to get into some of the better Batman ones.
Well, The Long Halloween is one of the better ones, I would say.
Dark Knight Returns. Mm-hmm. Year One. Maybe not so much Year One. I don't like Year One that much. It's good, but it's not Long Halloween good.
Mm-hmm.
But Dark Knight Returns would probably be a good way to go. And Watchmen. Although it is very dense.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen Watchmen the movie?
Yeah, I've seen the movie, and I've seen the comic panels of the ending, which is drastically different from the movie.
Yeah.
The squid?
Yeah, the squid.
Yeah. I'm glad they cut that part out.
Well, it would have been interesting.
It would have been interesting.
Giant squid.
I think it was a better... I think he made a good choice. I thought he made a better choice.
I don't really know. Because Dr. Manhattan is American after all. So I don't see it uniting the world against him. The whole point of the alien squid was that it wasn't from this world.
Yeah, but it still attacked the states. Whereas Dr. Manhattan attacked everyone. And he kind of said he went rogue. They kind of like, oh,
yeah,
he went rogue.
It's still not... I don't know. It's not the same.
I thought that united them a little better.
Not for me. That's where the film kind of dropped the ball a bit.
Not with how boring the storyline between Night Owl 2 and Silk Spectre was?
No.
No. Okay. Okay. Other big news this week was the supposed firing of Kristen Stewart from the Snow White and the Huntsman sequel, which, to my knowledge, before they even released Snow White and the Huntsman, it was, to my knowledge, that they were going to make a Huntsman prequel or some sort of spinoff with the Huntsman, so I can't say I'm surprised that she's not in it, because it was always meant to just be about the Huntsman.
Well, I never saw Snow White.
Neither did I.
But, you know, her name is in the title, so I would say half the movie was about her. So, I don't know. I'm not a big Kristen Stewart fan to begin with.
I thought you liked Twilight.
I'm not a big Kristen Stewart fan to begin with, so this news doesn't really affect me.
Even less so for me. Don't even look at me.
Even less so for Greg. All right. Cool. All right. Well done. Well done. Okay.
John Slattery is joining season 4 of Arrested Development.
Yes.
Very nice.
From Mad Men.
Very yeah. nice. I'm a big John Slattery fan.
I'm kind of upset that...
Is that how you say his last name?
Slattery?
Slattery.
Yeah.
All right, let's go with it.
I'm kind of upset that Canadian Netflix won't get the season.
That disappoints me, yeah. Because what's it coming up on? Like Hulu or...
Netflix.
Just American Netflix? Yeah.
Well, why did it not coming out on Canadian ones?
Some region copyright issue stuff. I don't know. It's really...
But Lilyhammer did. Lilyhammer was the first Netflix series.
Yeah, you know how some American Netflix has some stuff that content that Canadian Netflix doesn't have? Well, I don't understand why they don't do it, because it hasn't been made or anything yet. They can definitely strike a deal. But it's my understanding that it's only the American Netflix subscribers that are going to be able to see it.
For the first little while.
It'll eventually come out on DVD.
Eventually, obviously.
Yeah.
That's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
Does that mean we're not going to get the Kevin Spacey, David Fincher show either? It's like House of Cards, House of Wax, House of something. Deck of Cards.
Is that just like a Netflix
only? It's a Netflix only show, yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know, like I said, Lilyhammer was the show with Steve Van Zandt, and that was Netflix's first actual, like, Netflix-only show, and that one premiered on the same time in the States and here, and you can still watch it here, so I find it very odd that Arrested Development wouldn't follow the same suit.
Especially because it's such a big show with a huge following that you'd think they would try and get as many people to see it as possible.
Yeah.
Well, all this region stuff anyway with the Hulu and, like, different Netflixes always bothers me that, like, Canada's always exempt and, like, not allowed to access most of that, because we're just as developed as the States is. We might as well... It might as well be, like, a North American region lock if they're going to do such a thing anyway.
Aren't DVDs North American region locked?
Yes.
It's kind of odd how they would separate online content between Canada and the States. Like, if you ever go on MTV, the website, and watch something, it's like, you are Canadian, you can't view this content.
Well, especially because we're in Southern Ontario, we're an hour away from the border where they can easily see it on their own. Why can't we?
Well, it's legalities and that sort of, like, rights management and who owns what, right?
BS to me. I don't get to see my Arrested Development.
And damn it, you will not stand.
No, I love that show.
But speaking of Greg, you told me earlier that you watched a film from Matt's list.
Yes, last time I raised the challenge for you two to make your lists again for me to watch. And first one that I watched last week from Matt's list was Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1987 John Hughes movie starring Steve Martin and John Candy.
Welcome to Marathon. May I help you?
Yes.
How may I help you?
You can start by wiping that fucking dumbass smile off your rosy fucking cheeks. Then you can give me a fucking automobile. A fucking Datsun, a fucking Toyota, a fucking Mustang, a fucking Buick. 4 fucking wheels and a seat.
I really don't care for the way you're speaking to me.
And I really don't care for the way your company left me in the middle of fucking nowhere with fucking keys to a fucking car that isn't fucking there.
And I put it on your list because you said before that you had never seen a John Hughes film, correct?
Correct. I've seen parts of some of them, and no, I have seen Home Alone 1.
He didn't direct that.
I wouldn't count.
Did he direct either of them, one or two?
He wrote the...
Okay, so...
I think he wrote both of them.
I think he wrote 3 of them.
Ooh. Ooh. Yeah. Ooh.
Ooh. But Chris Columbus directed it. The guy that did the first two Harry Potter movies.
Okay. And then, yeah, I've seen parts of Ferris Bueller, but not the entire thing. Never seen Breakfast Club. There are others that I'm forgetting that I just haven't seen.
The whole teenage voice of a generation thing. But I put Planes, Trains, and Automobiles on the list because it was one of his non-teenage voice of a generation films.
Exactly. You explained it to me that a lot of those like teen voice of a generation things, if I'm going to go into them now, I'm probably too old to appreciate them. Because I'm not in that mindset anymore.
A bit, yeah.
And, of course, clearly I didn't get that from Planes, Trains. I certainly got into it.
I have to ask you, though.
Okay.
You have seen Due Date, and you saw Due Date before Planes,
Trains. I saw Due Date in theaters, yes.
And it's practically the same movie, I think.
Almost word for word, scene for scene.
And I have to ask you this question. Did the type of humor, because you are younger... And the Due Date type of humor is sort of what we grew up with, and that's, like, the popular thing right now. Did that crude humor in that film sort of take away anything from Planes, Trains at all?
I don't think so. If anything, it probably takes away from, like, the Todd Phillips types movies, like Hangover and Due Date. Mm-hmm. Or, like, the types of comedies that we generally see now. Like, I enjoyed... Planes, Trains, as I was watching it, like, there were a lot of those laugh-out-loud moments. A lot of those, oh, I remember that in Due Date, so that's where that came from, moments. I think the one thing that was really missing from Due Date that I got from Planes, Trains was the relatable characters. And, like, both of these characters, despite being complete opposite ends of the spectrum, you know, tight-wound versus... loosey-goosey, bumbling, fool, whatever, were both extremely human and very very relatable in their moments. And you felt for both of them at different moments because even in these extraordinary situations, you feel for them. And when you're watching a movie like The Hangover or Due Date, you just don't. You're like, these are such caricatures that are so overboard. It's like it's basically like watching clowns. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, like, stage performers.
And that goes hand-in-hand with not only the writing from John Hughes, who is an excellent writer, I find, but the performances from, especially John Candy, because he always plays just such a lovable, big oaf type of guy, kind of like Chris Farley, but not as stupid.
Nice. You can still respect him afterwards.
Yeah, you can still respect him afterwards. But, so you liked it?
Yeah, I really liked it.
And what would you give it out of 10?
Oh, screw you.
You gotta give a rating.
We do ratings on the Movie Chasm.
You know what I'm gonna do? I want to give it 8 point something, but then you're gonna be able... Well, you gave Dark Knight Rises a 9. Are you saying it's worse than Dark Knight Rises?
You can't really compare.
Judge it on its own. On its own merit.
8 point something. 8.5.
There we go. Did you change the rating after I mentioned the whole... dark aspect of the film with his wife in the trunk?
His wife isn't in the trunk.
No, it's his stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's his stuff, all right. It just makes the film a lot more interesting.
Well, the ending was already like a punch to the gut when you realized what his character was.
And I just love how he's a shower ring salesman.
Yeah, it's something so small and...
and so specific, too, that it's like, what? that tells you, A, what type of character he is right off the bat.
Yeah.
And it's funny. So...
it's very funny.
You know, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I love it. I would give it an 8 out of 10.
I like it. Probably somewhere around there.
Significantly better than Due Date.
Absolutely. What I will say about Due Date is you can watch it now and it'll be a lot funnier than it was 2 years ago. Because you won't...
Did you watch it after Planes, Trains?
I watched it last night.
So do you think because you watched Planes, Trains, it made the Due Date a little bit funnier?
No, it's because I haven't seen any trailers for Due Date in 2 years, and so the jokes were fresh again.
Okay. I can dig that.
The bit where he punches the baby still. Or not the baby. That's campaign. Where he punches the kid is still golden.
That's still golden. When he spits on the dog is golden. And when Galifianakis is like, my father loved me, he would never do that. I almost forgot that was coming. When it happened, I laughed out loud.
Oh, Galifianakis.
Are you hit?
Yeah, twice.
Better you than me.
That's nice.
You order room service?
Not really.
This could be a piss poor ending. That loaded?
You can only hope. Yes!
Well, Matt, you and I had the distinct pleasure of seeing the Canadian premiere of The Expendables 2 earlier this week as well.
Correct.
And how did you feel about that film?
I found it to be a parody of the action genre. I read somebody said that earlier, that it was sort of the cabin in the woods of the action. I wouldn't go that far. But it definitely felt more like a parody of everything that we've seen before than like an entry into the genre itself. Especially when you have Chuck Norris show up and the Good and the Bad and the Ugly theme song plays every time he's on the screen. And of course he has to do a Chuck Norris fact joke at the same time. But I had fun with it. I can look past all the thin plot and the bad acting because of the type of movie it is, and I knew what I was going to go into when I went and saw it. There's maybe two aspects of it I didn't like that kind of hurt the film for me. But as a whole, I did enjoy myself. I did have a fun time. Yourself?
I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I think it benefited that Stallone didn't direct it. I found the first one was a little wooden, a little too... It wasn't focused enough, and it seemed like he was kind of not all there. You could see it, that he was not... That he wasn't focusing where he should be acting or directing. And I felt that this one was a little more kind of cohesive, because he wasn't doing three different jobs at once.
Mm-hmm.
Or, sorry, two different jobs at once. Because he did write this one again.
Well, yeah, but he produced the first one, too.
Yeah.
I don't think he did this one.
Either way, it seemed like he was a little more relaxed, a little more laid back, and he was having more fun with it. And everyone seemed like they were having more fun with it.
Well, that's the thing. The film itself felt like it didn't take itself seriously. It was having more fun with everything. And my issue that my two issues that I brought up earlier is, one, the inclusion of Liam Hemsworth.
Yeah, I didn't really go for that one. It seemed kind of...
It wasn't...
Very loose, very just underused. They could have probably done it a little better. They could have used someone else. Or they could have done what they needed to do with his character with another character.
I think they could have used Jet Li. They could have killed two birds with one stone. They could have had an epic fight with Jet Li and Jean-Claude Van Damme. It would have been awesome. And after the events of that, it could have led to more motivation for everybody else to do what they need to do. Like, this new character, we, as an audience, have no connection to him whatsoever.
But he's hot.
It's not good enough.
That's true.
Like, they do, the beginning of the film does try and showcase him as much as possible, and there is this whole expository dialogue scene where he's explaining his past. So I'm like, why are they giving this kid so much screen time? And then, obviously, like, okay, they tried to do it because of this. But it wasn't enough for me as a viewer. It should have been somebody that I'd already known prior.
I just didn't like that they took Jet Li out of the movie.
That too.
Jet Li's only at the beginning of the movie, and then he doesn't really come back.
It's, I don't know, kind if of that annoying. Was story-wise, or like he had
other things,
scheduling conflicts. He was shooting another movie, and he had to go and do that instead.
But why would you turn down The Expendables? Why would you do that? Well, Mickey Rourke wasn't in this one either.
Mm-hmm.
Which I
they didn't mention him at all.
No, they didn't mention him at all. And he was a pretty integral character in the first one.
Yeah, and there was like the huge debate, because the whole thing is one of them dies. And the huge debate was, oh, it's going to be Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
And he's not even in this movie, so it's not him.
I don't know, I think they could have done a little more with Jet Li, with Liam Hemsworth, since they had to bring him in.
Mm-hmm.
The girl was...
That could have been one character, I think.
They could probably... The girl was kind of like, eh. She was kind of useful, kind of not. She brought a little bit of humor out of it, but I found that she was kind of underused. I found that by the end of the movie, everyone seemed like they were kind of on the same page, except for her.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was a little weird.
The dialogue is another problem. There's a lot of really... Sure, action films have corny one-liners. Like, in the film, one character grabs some chains and wraps it around another character's throat and starts choking him out, and he's like, let's wrap this up. because they're fighting. You can laugh at stuff like that. But then when it's so
obvious,
wink, wink at the audience when Schwarzenegger says, you know, I'm back or I'll be back. And Bruce Willis says, you've been back enough. I'll be back. And then
I think that's funny because how many movies has Schwarzenegger said, I'll be back and I'm back? Like even non-Terminator movies.
Running Man.
They make a Terminator joke in it too.
Terry Crews says, I'll terminate you or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a couple, there's a few too many, and most of them have to do with Schwarzenegger, and it's kind of, by the end, I was like, really?
I didn't like the Yippee-Ki-Yay one either. It was way too wink-wink at the audience, I found.
Like, there were some fun ones, but then there were other ones that you were just like, oh, of course that has
to be. The fun ones would be, like, hang around or wrap it up or something, then, but if they're referring back to actors' previous work, then they're just, like, a little too on the nose, I guess.
A little too much.
Way too on
the nose. A little too much. Like, it was fun the first couple times, but then when it gets excessive.
Yeah. My favorite, and this isn't really spoiling what happens, one character comes up and he goes, heads up, and then he throws a severed head at
another guy. See, I like that.
That's a good
That's fun.
There's a couple of goodies.
But, like I said, the referencing the actor's other films is a little too much for me. And it does it a lot.
Also, I challenge you to keep that up. To keep something up like that.
Okay, I will.
Yeah. Apparently that's how Jean-Claude Van Damme pronounces the word challenge.
Okay.
I didn't know that was possible. Yeah. But oh, that was the other thing I didn't like. Van Damme's name in the film? Villon.
Yeah.
Really?
Jean Villon. He's the villain.
That's Jean Villon, the villain.
That's a little too on the nose.
It's kind of like Cruella de Vil, devil.
Yeah. Or Lucifer.
Yeah. It was just, that was a little lame. But
Dr. Acula, the
Dr. Alucard.
Okay, Alucard.
Dracula backwards.
Lost. So clever.
So Monster clever. Squad.
I know. Anyway. Celebrated its 25th anniversary this week.
Mm-hmm.
You excited? Yeah. That just makes
I have
feel
it on
old.
DVD, so. But the film is fun. Lots of action. A lot more action than the first one I found, and it was.
Well, it starts out with an action scene.
Starts out with an action sequence. More the first one started out with like an espionage type thing when they go on the tanker or something. This one is just like balls to the walls action. I thought the action was choreographed better. And
did it still have a story? Did it just kind of give up that pretense?
Oh, it gave up the story.
Yeah, it's kind of
that was the
kind
problem
of
with the first
there.
One.
It's kind
of
hanging there.
I never saw either of them, but wasn't that like
the story? Van Damme is stealing
plutonium.
It was plutonium, and to sell to make millions of dollars. And like I said earlier, one of the expendables gets killed.
Yeah.
So it turns into this whole revenge film. And that's it. They're just trying to get revenge on him at the same time, stop him from selling the plutonium.
Plutonium.
Okay. Sounds like quite a challenge.
Challenge.
And the final fight between Stallone and Van Damme I thought could have lasted a bit longer.
It's still pretty awesome.
It's pretty good.
Because he does get to do his flying roundhouse.
The guy's what, like 50, over 50, and he's still limber, and he's jumping in the air doing kicks and all that. I'm a huge Van Damme fan. You cheered for him when he was unabashed. You cheered for him when he showed up, and I appreciate that.
I started to cheer for Chuck Norris too. The whole crowd went wild for Chuck Norris.
And there's another fight between Jason Statham and Scott Adkins, who he's been in a bunch of Van Damme movies, but he was in Wolverine. He played Weapon X. Have you seen Wolverine?
No, I haven't.
Okay, you've seen Wolverine. Reynolds was Weapon X.
No, the one at the end.
Okay. With his mouth so shut. Oh, Jesus. I remember when I laughed out loud when I saw that.
So, I knew who he was, and I knew how athletic he was with martial arts, so I was hoping they would get to fight. And when they had that little scuffle at the beginning, I'm like, all right, they're building up something. I thought that could have lasted a bit longer. I like martial arts in films, and, you know, that's Jean-Claude, that's Jason Statham and Scott Adkins, but this is a Stallone movie. So it's going to be Rambo-esque. And they mention Rambo in this film, too.
I imagine. Another wink. I figured they would.
Another wink to
the audience.
Yes. Yeah. But, you know, final words on The Expendables, too?
A lot of fun. Better than I thought it would be. And I'm looking forward to Expendables 3 with,
who might be in Expendables 3?
Oh. Nick Cage. And then Nick Cage is apparently already signed.
I got my ticket already.
Wait, it gets better.
He already signed, and they're courting Harrison Ford.
It gets better.
Wesley Snipes.
It gets better.
And Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Clint Eastwood when you said the good, bad, and the ugly music. I was like, Clint Eastwood. Great.
I can't really picture him doing a movie like this. I don't know if he'll be around when they get to the third one, but that'd be pretty cool.
He's going to be in his wheelchair.
He comes by and he does it.
He'll come out of retirement again for another movie. Final rating.
I'm going to give it an 8.
I agree.
I thought I was very underwhelmed by the first one, and I thought this one sort of did what the first one should have done. And I mentioned before in a review that I wrote for it that it feels like the Avengers of action films, because it's getting all these other action heroes together in one piece. So I appreciate it, and I recommend it to people that might have been disappointed with the first one, or even really like the first one, because it's all that and more.
I agree.
Thank you. Thank you for agreeing.
You're very succinct about it, so I don't feel that I need to add to that.
Let's make this the Matt cast.
The Matt cast.
Let's not.
So, today we watched The Raid, which Dave can tell us about, because Dave would know the specifics about it.
Watched the movie. You don't understand what it was about.
No, I don't know, like, who made it, or what year it was, or...
He's not gonna know the names.
It was Greg, made by...
I give you a chance, and you drop the ball.
Ino Piranha Ichibana.
Now you're getting offensive.
I am offended.
I'm probably pretty close. Now you're offending. I was probably pretty close to one of the names.
The Raid, Redemption. Or as it's called now, it's called The Raid Redemption. When it first came out, it was just called The Raid. It came out last year at TIFF. It was the premiere at Midnight Madness.
All stuff I would not have known to introduce the movie with.
But now it's called The Raid Redemption. From my knowledge, it's apparently to do with the fact that they're going to make more movies about The Raid, and that they're going to have similar subtitles, which is kind of annoying, because I just kind of like The Raid as opposed to The Raid Redemption. It doesn't flow right. Like, I know why it's called The Raid Redemption, but it doesn't flow quite properly. The director's name is Gareth Edwards, in case you were asking. I don't really know what the cast names are, and I don't want to butcher them horrendously, so I'm not even going to try. Basically, it has to do with a elite group of police officers and, like, a SWAT team type thing going into a building to extract a drug lord. And they're met with hostility, to say the least.
Yeah.
So, I saw it back in March. I went to a screening, and I saw it back in March. I loved it. I thought it was great. Action is insane. I don't even have words to describe how just ridiculous it is. The story is light, kind of like The Expendables. Very just, it's kind of there, just to kind of fill in the gaps.
It's an excuse to link these scenes together.
It's probably the best action I've seen in years, like straight up martial arts action style. And even some of the shooting is still pretty crazy. And I was a big fan of how he did it, and how it was very just, there's a couple of scenes that are very artfully done, kind of very unusual. The scene that comes to my mind is when they shoot out the door and they kind of get lit up, and that's how they get seen. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really well done. Yeah. And then there's a couple of other cool little effects that he does that aren't quite like overdone in action movies. And he rarely uses slow motion.
Mm-hmm.
Rarely uses slow motion, and I really appreciate that, because some directors overuse slow motion. Case in point, Zack Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked it. It didn't feel sped up, like the action was just crazy, and I keep saying crazy. It's just really well done. I really enjoyed it.
Now, Greg, on our last cast, you mentioned when we were doing our top 5 comic book films, you mentioned The Avengers and how the last half was just relentless action and you didn't care for any of it. That's this entire movie. So what did you think of The Raid?
You know, I did find a few of those scenes, like, being like, okay, can we just decide a winner, please? Just one of you die? Like, there, at least one or two of these cops are gonna die. A bunch of these drug lords are gonna die. Just get to it, please. I mean, the scenes themselves were fantastic. They were heart-pounding action. Dave's right, they were really well done, well choreographed, pretty artfully done. I think there's a tendency with some kung fu or martial arts or whatever, what have you.
Yeah, it's most definitely not kung fu.
No, I know it's not. And this might be like older movies where they didn't have the type of effects or whatever to pull off realistic looking like bone crunching or like knives piercing through people's limbs, stuff like that, where it just comes off as being very cheesy. None of that in this movie. This movie, pretty much everything looked really realistic. Like when people get stabbed or cut, you believe they were being stabbed or cut. If somebody got shot in the head, you thought that when the director yelled cut, they were dragging his body off the set. And, you know, to that respect, it was fantastic. But a lot of those action sequences, particularly one towards the end where it's a 2-on-1 fight, did feel like it could have been trimmed by a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm. I agree and disagree with your knife comment. There's a couple times where it looked kind of fake to me, and that's predominantly because of the CGI blood that they use. And, you know, a lot of action films these days are just going with CGI instead of squibs, which bring back the Expendables, which I didn't like with the first one. But I do agree, the choreography in this film is insane.
Yep.
And when you go to see a movie like The Raid, you're pretty much going to see all these fight sequences, so you're expecting great choreography. It's probably the best choreography I've seen since probably The Matrix, if I had to think of another martial arts type film.
I go back that far.
And it is violent. It's more violent than I expected. Like you said, people are getting stabbed left, right, and center multiple times. From, you know, machetes, knives, axes, like, you can just have a whole list of different things. Wood from a door, like, that was pretty crazy. I enjoyed that. Like Dave mentioned before, the story is pretty much just a premise. Cops go into a building to raid a drug lord, and then
I see where this title came from.
The rest of it is just, you know, shootouts, fight sequences, screaming from characters, and then a bit of dialogue. You did mention that one sequence when all the cops are in the dark, and it's done in slow motion.
It's the only one I can think of.
But it's done to great effect because it's very suspenseful. Because, you know, the one guy looks up, sees maybe some silhouettes of some guys, and he tells the other guy to stop, but telling him to stop sort of triggers him shooting the gun. And then the heat and fire from the gun lights them up, and then it's on from that point on. So that, you know, was artfully done, very suspenseful. It made the film sort of seem more than just a run-of-the-mill action film. The choreography speaks to that as well, I find. There was the one aspect with the brother incorporated into the story. I didn't really buy that. Didn't really, not grasp it, but, you know, believe it. And I find it maybe it was just thrown in to sort of have some sort of emotional arc for one of the characters, but it wasn't really done well. And it's not the type of film, again, where you expect to see something like that. So again, like the Expendables, I can forgive it. I can look past all that because of how well they do everything else.
Yeah, I basically just took every story plot element with a grain of salt and accepted whatever they threw at me because it was going to be bookended with another heart-pounding, well, like, fantastically choreographed action sequence.
And I did appreciate the 2-versus-1 fight scene. Yeah. I agree with you, it did go on a bit long, and
I love that scene.
Like you mentioned, the one character gets stabbed in the hand and he still fights as if he has no problem. I thought that scene would have been a bit more interesting if he fought as if he had the handicap and he was only fighting with his legs and his one hand.
I would have liked to see that if he was just he got his right hand stabbed through, so if he was just like, if anytime he needed to use that arm, he would just stop at the elbow.
Yeah, maybe use his elbow or something instead.
But a lot of times he was punching, swinging, falling over and catching himself with specifically his right hand, and I just felt the need to call bullshit on that. Small gripe.
It's low budget. What do you expect?
The fight scene is amazing.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought it would have been more interesting if they had added that element.
And these types of movies have done that type of thing before, where a character's got that kind of handicap and fights along with it.
Or runs with a stapled stomach everywhere.
Oh, God. The stapled stomach. Well, he does struggle. Like, there is a struggle on his face, but that's probably also because he was probably very tired.
That's the thing. A bunch of movies that we've been seeing recently have put characters in situations. I'm going to mention Prometheus, like I said earlier, the stapled stomach, The Raid with the knife in the hand, and Batman with the dislocated limp, disc and the limp with his leg. And these are
and
all...
the staff. And the staff.
And the staff. And these are all aspects that the director could have incorporated into whatever sequence to make it more interesting, but they don't. And that really sort of gets under my skin a bit, because you would think they would, because, you know, a lot of people don't do that very often. Whenever you see a movie, somebody gets shot and they limp for the first 5 seconds, and then all of a sudden they're jumping everywhere, and they do that in Prometheus, and they do that in Batman, and they do that in The Raid. But if they just kept it throughout the whole fight sequence in whichever movie, it would make things more interesting.
Well, it kind of takes you back to the days of like Die Hard in the 80s, where he was walking on shards of glass in his bare feet, and from that point on in the movie, he is having a hard time walking, mm-hmm. pretty much until the end.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of wonder, like, these days, if they're gonna injure your main characters or one of your main characters and give him this kind of handicap, why don't they stick with that? Like, if they're not going to follow through to the end, why even bother doing it in the first place?
That was my biggest problem with Batman and his limp and everything, because they don't follow that through. Make it interesting. Incorporate it into the story. Incorporate it into the fight and choreographed sequences to make it different, and nobody's done that, I find.
I like what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying. Although Batman has its share of problems, so that's just kind of like the last rung of the problems. But this one, you can see a little bit of struggle. Like, there's not enough struggle, but you can see a visual struggle that they're kind of tired or they are visibly injured. But then it also goes back to when he gets stabbed in the face and he doesn't move at all. And then he just walks off like it's nothing, even though he gets stabbed in the face.
No, but his buddy who he was carrying around, that was one lasting injury that did last throughout the entire movie and did do a really good job following through. Although they just did kind of leave him.
He gets left in the dark for a good chunk of the movie.
When he was there, he was gravely wounded. And then they kind of said, okay, we can't carry you around anymore.
You're dead weight.
Take a seat.
That handicap made that fight sequence interesting, because here's all these guys coming. You have two guys. One's injured, and he's holding him. The one guy is holding the injured guy up, and he has to fight all these people. That was interesting, because he had that handicap. If they had incorporated that later, maybe I would have given this film a 9, but I'm not.
What are you giving it instead?
Probably an 8.
Just an 8?
Yeah. Like, I can give a mindless film like this an 8, just like I gave Expendables an 8. You know, it's easy for me to do that. I respect storytelling. I love it. But you have to know what you're getting into with a film like this, and I knew that, so I can prepare myself for the type of experience I'm going to have.
I'll give it a 7.5, just because it did what it did well, and didn't really do anything, didn't make any missteps. It's just not my type of film. It's not my taste.
It's not your type of film, and a 7.5 is still a pretty high rating.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm just... I tend to skew higher with my ratings.
You do. I find that a lot. Because you say you don't like a film, and then you give it, like, a 7 or an 8, and I'm like,
That's okay. The thing, like, to get below a 5, it has to be an egregious film.
Like Piranha 3DD?
Oh, God. That's maybe a 2. No, I can't even think of redeeming factors. That's probably a 1.
I gave it an 8 as well. That's what I gave it back in March, and it held up since then.
Yeah, so this is your second time seeing it.
This is my second time seeing it.
And it holds up fine.
It holds up pretty well. Because I don't pay attention to the story. The story's still goofy.
You mentioned...
The rest is still really great. In fact, that scene you were talking about earlier, where he's walking with the guy with the handicap, I've watched that scene about 3 or 4 times this week. I just turned it on, and I just cut right to that scene. I wish there was a feature on the DVD, or the Blu-ray, where it would just be, like, cut to an action sequence, so I don't have to fast-forward to it.
Well, I could see why. That scene's pretty intense. Like, I would easily rewatch that a few times, too.
And I can see myself easily rewatching parts of the movie again. Like, the 2-on-1 scene. Like, that scene's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I can see myself watching that scene again and again.
Now, you mentioned while we were watching it that the score is different.
Yes,
elaborate a bit on that.
I don't know about the original score, but I do know that they changed it. I believe it's someone from Linkin Park did the second score. And I know in the States now they have an unrated Blu-ray, which has the original score on it. But I do not think that got imported into Canada.
Do you know why?
I have no idea. It's kind of annoying, because I wanted to have like the full uncut movie. But at the same time, I don't really see what you would have cut. What's there? What is there? I don't know.
So the version you saw earlier is the exact same as the one.
I believe that is correct. Yes, because the music didn't sound kind of. It sounded very similar. So if it had been changed.
The only other movie that I can think of where they changed the score for God knows what reason is Legend, the Ridley Scott film. Tangerine
with Tom Cruise. With Tom Cruise?
Yeah. It's pretty much the same film, but they changed the score.
The entire score?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Entire new score.
Why?
I have no idea.
That's something to research to find out for our viewers, or sorry, our listeners for the next chasm.
The next chasm will have IMDb trivia of Legend for you.
But to conclude, since I was asked before we started to give Greg his first film from my list.
I gave him 10, you gave him 10, he's got one off on mine already.
Yes, he hasn't seen what my list looks like. I don't think he's seen what your list looks
he's
like.
He's seen
half of yours because...
it's used from last
year. Originally, we had like lists of 5 yes. from like last year, and we were going to have 4 different people give me them.
Well, so that means you know 3, because you've already watched Religulous.
I've watched Religulous.
And Planes, Trains.
Offhand... I remember Planes, Trains is on your list. Pianist was on your list.
Martyrs
was on your list.
And Blindness.
And Blindness was on your list.
And you've watched Planes, Trains, and I've replaced Religulous because you've already seen it.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen either of your new lists in their entirety.
So the next episode, you'll have watched whatever film he's about to give you.
Yes.
And then I'll hand you my next movie for you to watch, because okay. I have it for you.
Maybe we should do it like that. He doesn't get to see what the lists look like.
That's fine. And like we won't have a year-long time limit. We'll just have, like, by episode 20, I'll have seen the 20 movies.
There's a couple. I don't know if the library will have them.
If not, I can borrow them from one of you.
And I don't have a copy of this movie either.
I'm not buying it.
So
somebody's buying it.
Get Netflix for a free month and watch it, because that's where I watch it.
And you're not allowed to watch it on YouTube.
Yes. Please stop this YouTube watching.
Let's stop. Unless, I watched one movie.
Unless it's the full movie. Like, you know how sometimes on YouTube it has like 1 hour and 39 full movie instead of 9 parts of one?
Yeah.
Try and get one of those.
Okay. Are you still mad? Are you mad at me because I watched the one scene of Planes, Trains on YouTube because the DVD was scratched?
You know, I was
you seemed upset.
I was upset when you first told me because we had this whole discussion with Almost Famous.
It
you
was
missed an entire scene, but
a crucial scene.
You watched the movie on DVD and then you stopped it and went on YouTube and watched
no, I did not.
Scene.
No, I did
and then
not.
You went back to the movie, so you don't know
no,
if
I did
you missed
not.
Whatever portion of the film.
No, I did not. I watched the movie in its entirety, like went through the.
And then you went back and watched
went through the
ladies.
Scene.
Ladies.
We
ladies.
Are having a lively debate here.
So wait, you watched the entire film. It was skipping, and then you hit next, watched the rest of it, then you went on YouTube and watched the one scene?
Yeah, and it. Filled in the gap pretty much exactly.
Pretty much.
If I missed, at most I missed like 30 seconds.
Could have been
crucial.
Like, could have been
plot
crucial
points.
30 seconds.
Crucial plot point.
The alternative was missing about like, 18 fuck bombs.
Those 30 seconds you missed the dead body in his trunk. What's this film? I want to hear this film that you've got for
yeah.
And if it's on my list,
so
I'll
okay.
X it out.
Matt's gonna love this.
Oh my goodness.
Nanook of the North.
How easy will it be for me to get?
I got it out of the library.
Okay.
Oh my goodness.
I'm thinking outside of the box on this one.
For next episode, I will have a review of Nanook of the North.
You can't review this movie.
He will. He just promised. Don't tell him anything.
As a heads
don't,
up.
Don't.
I was
forced. I don't want to.
I was forced
I
to watch this
hear.
In film school. As a heads up.
Tell you what movie I want to see is Gummo. I've heard something about it.
I haven't seen it.
I've never seen Gummo.
I wanted to see it. It's not on Netflix. Or it might be on Netflix. I thought I saw it maybe the one time.
It might be.
I think I saw it on like Amazon for $10. I may pick it up.
So you won't buy some of the movies that Matt's going to throw at you, but a random movie called Gummo you're going
to
buy.
Gummo is supposed to be good.
Supposed to be.
Why are you recommending... Yeah. Why are you telling him to watch Nanny of the North?
Don't worry, I'll watch it.
I'll tell him once he watches.
I think you just gave him that to piss him off.
Why are you ruining the fun of
Tune
Nanny
in
of the North?
Tune in next week when Dave has a black eye.
Any closing thoughts, gentlemen?
No, I'm good.
All three of the films that were discussed today, I highly enjoyed.
I agree. They are all very well done films. And I think we had a good week this week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I look forward to next week when Greg gives us his thoughts on Nanook of the North.